Last week we were looking at the life of Gideon. The last 2 weeks, actually, we're going to finish with Gideon today. Remember, we're trying to study Gideon's actions as an individual, the things he did right, the things he did wrong, his highs and lows. But we also want to study his life within the context of the book of Judges. You who are with us regularly remember that there are several cycles in the book of Judges that we're looking at. Within each cycle we've studied, we've seen that there are five steps, at least for the purpose of our organizational thoughts. We've identified them as five steps. They were sin. The people fell into sin, then servitude, then they cried out to the Lord's supplication. The Lord saved them, salvation, and then they had peace in the land. We are presently in the fourth cycle. We have studied the first three. Now we're in the fourth cycle. Each cycle so far has grown a little longer, a little more detailed, a little more content about the process of the cycle. And we've gained through this, hopefully, better insights into the Lord's working with the key individuals involved. I thought about this statement, and I thought whether to make it or not. And you guys don't have any stones or fruit or anything with you, right? So I thought of this after studying God's character through many of the Old Testament studies. If you do not read the Old Testament and understand God's character, you will not understand the New Testament. Just something for you to think about. You can agree or disagree, I don't mind, but I think it's before the New Testament for a reason, okay? When we understand his character and how he formed us and why he formed us and how we messed up, then all of a sudden the New Testament is incredibly good news. These cycles are growing longer. The interaction with these individuals is becoming more described to us. Last week we left off with the story of Gideon going into the battle. But I wanted to take just a minute for those who haven't been with us to catch up a little bit. Remember, God called Gideon, but Gideon said what? Our nation is weak. We can't beat the Midianites. They've thumped us for a long time. My tribe is weak. My family is weak, and I'm the weakest of my family. Therefore, that's every excuse you could possibly come up with. Now, we as creative Americans could come up with more excuses, but that's the ones that he came up with. But I think most of us can identify with Gideon and his responses. Most of us would have some of those same excuses. But God is calling him to an immense and special task, something that he has never seen before and the nation hasn't seen for a long time. God shows great patience in bringing Gideon to a point of confidence in him, just as he is doing with us. He is showing incredible patience over our lifetime as we slowly begin to advance in our faith with him. Did I just die? I'm back. Somehow I bumped the mute button. I'm very coordinated. God is showing great confidence with us. It's important to note that Gideon, though, is a willing person. He doesn't say, I won't go. He just says he's afraid to go. And I think that's the difference. I don't think God ever minds us being fearful. I think he does mind us refusing to go, refusing to change, though. And notice, God doesn't take over Gideon's body and just make it into an automaton. Gideon is honestly struggling with these choices. He's struggling with what he has to do. When God says, you mighty man of valor, he questions that. And God didn't take him over and make him, and all of a sudden, he turned into, Arnold Schwarzenegger or something, he just became a mighty man of valor. It was a process for him. God was teaching him. God teaches and then he demonstrates. He teaches and then he demonstrates. Last week I used the term, I don't know if you remember, the faith building activities. I don't know if you remember that. We identified seven faith building activities in Gideon's life that brought him to the point where he could actually accomplish what God wanted him to accomplish. So he had kind of like a pretest before the SAT had to be really taken, and he had a lot of these. So I'm just going to review them really quickly for those that weren't with us. The first faith building activity was the meat and the bread and the broth on the rock. Do you remember that? The angel of the Lord touched the offering, fire rose out of the rock. Now, most of us have not seen our fire grew out of the rock and consume our lunch, right? This is not, you know, unless you're in Hawaii and some islands, I guess it happens. But, you know, most places this doesn't happen. Because remember, prior to this, what Gideon's response was, yeah, I've heard a lot of stories about God and that he is big stuff, but I haven't seen anything. And he's not being sassy to God here. He's just being honest. And most of us fall into the same category. We've heard a lot about what God's doing, but we haven't experienced a lot about it. It's actually a response that each generation should make, each person should make. If we don't make that, we'll never grow confident in our faith because we won't ever have challenged the status quo that we grew up with. He's beginning in that. He's beginning to see God in action. Faith activity, building activity number two was when he was told to tear down the altar. He was told to tear down the altar and he burned the false gods. That's a little bigger deal because as opposed to being alone and watching your lunch get burned up by some fire, now his life is going to be at stake. And he knows that what he's going to do is a major aggressive action against the God established, not our God, but their God of the day established status quo. So it's a big deal. It's a step up in his faith to take this next step of action. And once again, you don't see he's filled with confidence, but he does it. He doesn't go out in the day because he's fearful. So he does it at night, hoping no one will really know who did it. But they eventually find out. And then faith building activity number three, remember, was the fleece. And the first time the fleece was supposed to be wet and the ground dry. And he woke up and that's the way it was. But then he thought, well, maybe that's just chance, right? We said that. And so I'm going to flip this thing around and we're going to see if it's today, Lord, I want the fleece dry and the ground wet. And it was so the next morning. And you notice his answer? When he asked for that faith building activity number four, he says, please don't be angry with me. Now, one of the things I might ask you to think about is when you believe in a lot of other gods like Greek gods and Roman gods and all this pantheon of deities, there's always a lot of anger involved. They're angry all the time. They toy with your emotions. They like to do things that hurt you. But the Bible, for a humble person, you never see anger from God. If you are humble in your faith, he's never angry with you. You can't picture a just parent being angry with their children because they have an additional question. An impatient parent, yes, but God's not an impatient God. God is incredibly patient, incredibly good to us, and he's not angry. God notices his lack of faith. In fact, Gideon notices it too because he apologizes for it. Basically says, don't hurt me, I'm sorry. I'm trying to have faith. But just like most of us, Gideon is a bit of a slow learner. But God knows we're slow learners, right? And he's good to us and he's patient with us. Faith building activity number five, remember he says he has 32,000 soldiers to go up against this massive raiding party of Midianites who are coming in to take everything of value from them again. He says to him, you have too many men. That's not something that any general or leader in a war really wants to hear. Oh, you have too many men. I thought about it this week in terms of the stock market thing again. I thought, it's just like saying you have too much money in your retirement account. You know, it's just not, nobody says that. I just have too much money in my retirement account. I better get rid of some. But in this day, that's the best I can do because you guys don't go to war against the Midianites. So he says, you have too many men. The enemy is countless, but I think you should go. And anybody who is fearful, leave. Now, guess who didn't leave? Gideon, right? He didn't leave. Five activities ago, he was fearful to the point where he probably would have left at that point. But by the time he's gone this far, he doesn't leave. He stays there. I thought that was pretty cool of him to get that far that fast. So it's getting strong and he's getting stronger in his faith and activities. faith building activity number 6. He says you still have too many men, which is always a little, I mean, you got to have pretty faith to, you know, you're facing all those people. By the way, do you remember what those guys, when they break their pitcher, what they have in their hands? They have a trumpet in one and a light in the other, or a pitcher, a torch inside of a light, right? Doesn't say anything about swords, spears, weapons. See, they don't have any because the conquering nations just made sure they couldn't protect themselves and took every sort of weapon that you could possibly find for them to have. So now you've got this guy who had 32,000 brave men who were tired. They were a little fearful. Sure, we all would be. And then it went down to 10,000, and now it's down to 300 with no weapons. The odds are not that, you know, impressive to most of us. We can go, hey, this is cool. This is a chance to show God mighty. You know, most of us are like, I suddenly feel a little scared myself. I think I'll take the second shift out of here, you know. So, but he is getting stronger, and he doesn't leave, and he stays with God in the face of that. Faith building activity number 7. The final faith building activity before the battle was to creep down and listen to what the soldiers had to say in the enemy camp. And the Lord suggests this to him. You notice how early on Gideon was initiating the first actions. He's this, could I go get some stuff and put it on the rock and would you bless me and that sort of thing. But as he becomes closer to God, he hears the voice of God much more clearly. He takes action much more clearly on what God is saying. And I thought to myself, is it possible that most of us would like to hear the voice of God for the really big challenges in life? But is it possible that you'll never hear the voice of God for the big challenges unless you make a habit of hearing the voice of God for the little challenges, or the still small voice of God for the little challenges? Which means we need to be in fellowship, having communion with him all day long, so we're hearing what he is saying to us. And then when the big responsibility comes, we'll be ready for it. And Gideon is now getting direct instructions from God on what to do. And he says, if you're not confident yet, go down and listen to the outside of the tent here. And Gideon goes down, and what does he hear? They're talking about him and the nation and that God is going to destroy them. And so God is doing the work for him before he ever gets there. So I would urge you to continue to try to listen to the still small voice of God as you go. The steps God leads us into, the faith-building activities that we see ourselves, are often similar in purpose to developing us as God followers in a very aggressive way. Yet they're diverse in the fact that each one is individual for us. The way God would lead Todd is not going to be the same faith-building activity as he would lead Roger or Gloria or anybody else. So you can't sit there and go, well, you know, you're not as much of a man or woman of faith because you haven't been where I've been. We're all in a different place. He's taking us differently. We didn't see anybody else led like Gideon was. Gideon was the person. In the previous stories, Deborah, Barak, these were the people doing unique things before God. So we need to be hearing the still small voice so that we can continue to follow him closely. Guys, I have a funny mind, I think. It's not quite normal. But I was thinking of, you know, what should I call these faith-building activities? So I just listed them as FBAs, right? You guys have an IRA, some of you. You know what that is? IRA. How's your IRA doing? So now I'm not going to say that. I'm going to go, how's your FBA doing? You know, I want to know how your faith-building activity is doing, because that's what's important to me. I don't care about your IRA, especially in this financial culture. I care about your FBA. So if I ask that, I know what you're going to look at me and go, what? But I thought it was clever anyway, so thank you. The tasks will differ not only between us, but at different times in our life. I do know that Gideon was called to do this kind of dynamic thing the rest of his life. There was a specific time he was called to be this dynamic, this aggressive, this highly challenged, and then it seems like it kind of mellowed out a little bit. But the early faith-building activities that he went through were to bring him to come to a place to know and trust God, which obviously by his own account he didn't have or do in his early life. So, and remember, he wants to show Gideon that he is Lord of the physical world, because he shows him power over physical things, and then he wants to show him that he is Lord over the spiritual world too. And a good way to do that is to have the guy tear down the altars to the other gods, who were supposed to be big deals in that land, right? But when they tore down the altars to Baal and Ashtaroth, nothing happened. They didn't come down and zap Gideon, as his father indicated might happen if that God was real. So part of the challenge for God is to get us convinced that he is Lord over both the physical and the spiritual. He's always trying to bring us to that point. Do we recognize his hand in everything that we do? That was his goal with the disciples, right? We see this in the New Testament. He brought them, he taught them content, and then he took them out and he showed them his power over the spiritual. He cast out demons. But he also calmed the waters, right? So he showed the power over the physical as well. It's always the same for us. He's trying to show us that he is the supreme God of all things, physical and spiritual. The entire book of Matthew, which we looked at, is full of moving back and forth between spiritual domination by God and physical domination by God when he chooses to. When he casts out demons, when he calms the waters, these things should give us the confidence. Until he asks us the question that he asked Peter, who do you say that I am? Now, early on, Peter couldn't have answered that question. But after seeing Jesus demonstrate power over the physical and spiritual, when he said, who do you say that I am, Matthew, Peter could confidently, in Matthew 16, Peter could confidently answer, thou art the Christ. That was something he couldn't have done at the beginning. The same way here, Gideon could not have answered with a clear definition of God until he had gone through each of these learning stages. When the faith-building exercise have reached a point, God then calls us to action. And this is what we have here. He has worked with Gideon, and now it's time for action. If you have your Bible, or if you picked up the sheet in the back, we're going to pick it up. The battle begins actually in chapter 7, verse 19. And it's a quick battle. Or there's not much about the battle in the Bible. I got to find mine here. 7:19. And Gideon and the 100 men with him, because they're broken into three groups, reached the edge of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch, just after they changed the guard. They blew their trumpets and broke the jars that were in their hands. The three companies blew the trumpets and smashed the jars, grasping the torches in their left hands and holding in their right hands the trumpets they were to blow. And they shouted, a sword for the Lord and for Gideon, while each man held his position around the camp. All the Midianites ran, crying out as they fled. When the 300 trumpets sounded, the Lord caused the men throughout the camp to turn on each other with their swords. The army fled to Beth Shittah toward Zerah, as far as that other place. Okay, so, sorry, I could try, but you know, why bother? It's all good. That's the battle. That's done. I mean, they didn't lose anybody. They didn't do anything. They went there. The Lord had prepared it for them. I love the part they have no swords, no weapons. They just kind of, this is just not, I was trying to imagine this. I don't know if you guys sit and think about this stuff, but you know, here comes the, you know, some marauding army under the Kenai Peninsula. And you know, I've got like what? I don't know. You know, we don't have torches now. What? I got a flashlight, you know, and a boombox. I don't know what, you know, we don't have trumpets either, but whatever it was, it didn't seem very good when the other guy has automatic weapons and, you know, firing things like that. But see, the thing is, if God is with you, if he set you to the task, you're going to be fine. And he was fine in this situation, and they just routed the enemy. And I'm not going to read the mop-up procedures, which are the next chapter or so. You can read that on your own. It tells how they pursued and struck down the enemy. I just want to catch, before we close today, the end of Gideon's life. And we'll move to verse 22. It's on that page that if you pick it up in the back of chapter 8. The battle's over. They've conquered everybody. The men of Israel said to Gideon, "Rule over us, both you and your son and your grandson also, for you have delivered us from the hand of Midian." Okay. What are the people missing in this answer? They're leaving God out of the answer, right? They're saying, "You have saved us." Well, does Gideon think he really saved them? After all he's been through, all those faith-building activities and hearing how God set up the battle long before it happened for them to be successful. Gideon does not leave God out of the equation as the people do. Have you guys ever left God out of the equation of your own life? I mean, I have. It's probably more often that we leave him out than we include him. But I really love Gideon's answer here. There have been a few men in the history that have said these phrases, but not many. By the way, rule over us, if you look up the word in Hebrew, it doesn't just mean rule like a democratic government. It means sovereign. It means, and obviously he says, your children and your children's children. He's talking about a king. He's talking about you're going to be the ultimate authority over our nation for generations to come. This was not any part of God's plan for Gideon. He didn't tell them that. And Gideon gives this great response. But Gideon, in verse 23, "But Gideon said to them, 'I will not rule over you, nor shall my son rule over you. The Lord shall rule over you.'" And that is just one of the classic, most beautiful verses in the Bible to me. He didn't lose focus when success came, or at least not yet. He gave the Lord the proper credit. And then, after that phenomenal answer, which is just an example to us all, I believe he makes a bit of a stumble here. So let's read what he says. "Then Gideon said to them, 'I would like to make a request of you, that each of you would give me the earrings from his plunder.'" For they had golden earrings because they were Ishmaelites. So they answered, "We will gladly give them." And they spread out a garment, and each man threw into it the earrings from his plunder. By the way, it tells you what kind of war that was. It's a pretty brutal war. Life is cheap in those days. "Now the weight of the golden earrings that he requested was 1,700 shekels of gold, besides the crest and ornaments, pendants and purple robes, which were on the kings of Midian, and besides the chains that were around the camels' necks." And then here comes the sad verse. "Then Gideon made it into an ephod and set it up in his city Ophrah, and all Israel played the harlot with it there, and it became a snare to Gideon and his house." So first of all, what is Israel's besetting sin? Do we all know that by now? It's idolatry, right? That's the thing they continually mess up on. They're always putting something in as a substitute for God. This had gone on for a long time, but this is just the fourth cycle in recent talking history, because they're an oral communicating history. And I don't know if you know what an ephod is. An ephod was the priestly garment. It's kind of like a smock kind of thing. It hangs over the front and the back, and it had the breastplate and all the special stuff that the high priest was supposed to wear. So why is Gideon recreating the priest, a priestly garment? He's not of the house Levi, he's not a priest. He's got no special ability to be a priest, except for we've seen in like three different occasions in this story, he has built an altar and offered a sacrifice with the Lord's blessing. But the Lord didn't say, build an ephod and establish yourself as a priest. That was a very specific thing to a very specific group. And I believe that Gideon overreached what he should have done here. And naturally, as soon as he put it up, it becomes an item that the people come to worship. Now, we sort of snicker at that because, you know, if Dennis builds a ephod in his out by his float plane there, I'm not coming to worship it. You know, I'm like, what in the world are you doing, Dennis? So, but I would submit to you that although we wouldn't build an ephod because it has no meaning for us, we do create things that we worship. And that we do create things that make us forget about God. And we have to be careful that we do not create the very thing that we say is not going to rule us, but we create it in some form. Here he is dynamically leading his country to tear down the Baals and the Astaroths and all these other things and going through all these challenges to grow in his relationship with God. And then he makes this incredibly ridiculous blunder where he creates this item that the people pursue and worship. And it was a snare. And it doesn't say just to those people. It says to Gideon and his house. And I don't exactly know how that was, if it made him feel very important. But it wasn't a good growth point for him. And then the story finishes this way. And we can recognize the end of the story because we've looked at three of them previously. Peace comes to the land. Remember the silence. Thus Midian was subdued before the children of Israel, so they lifted their heads no more. In other words, they were not dominant over Israel anymore. And the country was quiet for 40 years in the days of Gideon. And then when Jerubbabel, the son of Joash, which is Gideon, of course, went and dwelt in his own house, Gideon had 70 sons who were his own offspring, for he had many wives. And his concubine who was in Shechem also bore him a son whose name was Abimelech. Now Gideon, the son of Joash, died at a good old age and was buried in the tomb of Joash's father in Ophrah. And then verse 33, so it was as soon as Gideon was dead that the children of Israel played the harlot with the Baals and made Baal-Berith their god. Thus the children of Israel did not remember the Lord their God who had delivered them from the hands of all their enemies on every side, nor did they show kindness to the house of Gideon in accordance with the good he had done for Israel. Two things to point out there. Briefly, on the idea of multiple wives. Apparently there's more than one way. He wasn't extremely bright. Although we have the idea that multiple wives was allowed, it was never suggested by the Lord. In the Garden of Eden, God made Adam one wife. And when you exceed that, you're asking for trouble. And each of the people, Abraham, each of the people who took this into their own hands and had multiple wives end up paying the price for that. Solomon. It doesn't add dignity to the individual. It doesn't add dignity to the relationship to exceed that. It cheapens and lessens the relationship. So here's another mistake that he makes. He wasn't the good example that he should have been here. And it comes back to haunt him. We'll look at that in the future. But we see overall that the choices that the nation is making. Remember, we used early the term slide. They just start sliding right back into the same poor choices that they made before. Do you guys slide? I don't know. Does anybody slide there? Simple nod. I see a lot of no's. You know, I don't slide. I think it's hard for us not to slide. It's hard not for, you know, and we make a good choice or something goes well, and it's hard for us then to humbly remember the Lord and not. It's at that point I think we're often the most weak. We're at the most at risk. We've had a little success at something, and all of a sudden we slide. We lose a little bit of the humility, a little of the God focus. I like to learn easy personally. I'm not saying I do, but ideally I would like to learn easy and not suffer too much. And I certainly don't want to cause those around me to suffer by poor choices that I make. See, Gideon just didn't affect himself here. He hurt other people. So at the thought of being witty and clever, your FBAs, your faith-building activities, I want to know how those are going for you. I want to know that you're pursuing them, and that you're pursuing them for your family too, your children, your husband. What are we doing to build faith in God, to correctly define God? If we want our young people to follow God, they have to have a correct definition of Him. Otherwise, who would follow Him? If I was a non-Christian today and I looked at Christianity in the United States based on what I would see on TV evangelists, I would not choose to be a Christian. And I'm not trying to be critical, as that may have sound, because somebody may look at me and say, based on him, I'd certainly go. I hope they'd look at me and say, well, God saved him. God can save anybody. So, which is much more closer to the truth. But what are we doing to build that faith? And, you know, we're doing a lot to create comfort for ourselves. And that's not wrong. God gives us freedom to have a nice house or whatever. I'm not criticizing that. But along with that should be those faith-building activities for ourselves, where we hear a still small voice, and the still small voice is moving us to have more confidence in Him. So then, when the big challenges come, whatever they are, whether they're to us personally or those we care for, or in a broader scope nationally, for those who accept those responsibilities, we're ready for the big challenges when they come. Let's pray. Lord, I thank you for your word, the ideas that are in there for us to learn from. Most of all, I thank you for you and your goodness to us and your kindness to us. Help us to acknowledge you, to stay focused on you. And when we do slide, I really do thank you for bringing us back to a clear focus on you, as clear as we're able to do. Thank you for everything, for all of our existence. And I ask this in Jesus' name, amen.